Hello, welcome to another edition of Thinking Like a Lawyer. I'm Joe Patrice.
I missed the interruption. I really did. It was good to hear it again.
So we're already
glad you're happy.
We're good. Already out of sorts for this introduction, but I'm Joe Patrice from Above the Law. You have also heard from Catherine Rubino and Christopher Williams, who's here too, and we're gonna talk about legal stories for the week.
Probably a lot about the Supreme Court.
I mean, I guess this
is technically the small talk, but you know, usually
there it is.
Yeah. You know, usually before the podcast starts, little insider baseball, there's usually a text I get sent. I was like, hey, these are the stories that did well last week, or these are the stories you'd like to talk about. We didn't get that message today. Mm-hmm. I wonder what the topic will be.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And maybe, I don't know if anybody else has any small talking, but otherwise, I think we can jump right into the release of the Law 360 400 ranking. That isn't what we're going to talk about? A ranking that just says, here's how many people employ?
It's the second ranking in the
There's
industry.
There's two. They make two of these things.
People. And they're different.
Yeah, because one of them's the firm size, and one of them's the firm size, but only limited to firms that are based in the U.S. It's so ridiculous. As I've pointed out a few times, it is as if you released how many at-bats a batter had in the baseball season and then said, and we refused to track what happened at any of them. But they were up that many times.
I know I used the inside baseball metaphor earlier, but you don't have to use baseball
actual
metaphors,
baseball.
You know, these are lawyers. These are all nerds.
I mean, in fairness, I'm not a particularly baseball fan or anything, but actually, when you're talking about statistics, you kind of do have to use baseball analogies. That's kind of the most robust statistical.
Baseball is
for most
definitely
people.
My least favorite sport.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like the dark days of summer when baseball is the only sport really available.
Yeah. No, I mean,
this is why I'm an F1 fan now, by the way.
So that you have something to do.
Yeah.
At least until there's a summer break there, because they also have that.
But the summer break is like 3 weeks, and they pretend like that's a long time, and it's not.
All right.
I still need to watch that documentary. I hear good things.
Yeah. Oh, the Drive to Survive show, or?
Well, there was some documentary about the F1 racing. I heard from some Tinder match. I mean, that's how I feel like people learn nowadays. It just, you know,
right.
Anyway, maybe I'm telling on myself, but they were like, "Ooh, racing thing, go watch this." I'm like, okay.
Yeah, then it's definitely Drive to Survive. That's a series they put out every year.
Basically about the year before's season. And that's actually how I got into F1, was watching that first year of the document, the Netflix special. And it got me hooked.
Mm-hmm. It is very good. Anyway, at least that season was. The first season was definitely great.
I haven't been able to finish last season because I'm still so salty. So salty about the result. But yeah, I mean, it's not the fault of the documentary. It's the fault of
how things go.
FIA. So,
true. You know. All right. Well, and we delved into that in a previous episode of the show, even. So let's
still salty, though.
Yeah.
Just
so
FYI.
I hear you.
Want to know what else I'm salty about? It's the Supreme
Court. Oh, no. Too bad.
It's okay. It's the Supreme Court. We can
still
talk about it.
That was a transition. Okay. That was a transition. I was going to say, I'm so sorry. Small talk has ended. But no, that's good. That is a good transition. So yeah, the Supreme Court term is not yet quite over. It will be at probably right as soon as this episode releases. But it's still got four cases to go. But don't worry. In the last few days, a lot's happened.
They have destroyed multiple rights. So, you know, there's that.
It's really incredible. And I think we'll get into a lot of what's happened here. Mm-hmm. Personally, I just want to talk about, you know, this is the classic lawyerism of it. Put aside the substance, which the stupid lawyering of it, it's really been incredible to me, the laziness of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Part of being a judge, I always thought, was you either, I mean, like the super naive argument is that you follow the law perfectly, but whatever. But the second was that you're constantly trying to figure out new ways to explain how novel situations fit within a greater legal superstructure and don't cause cascading bad effects. I think that's, I always thought that was a, in law school, I thought this was an engaging intellectual exercise. How do they get to the result they want without causing all these problems? And the answer today is just do what you want. There's no need to honor. Within 24 hours, there's no need to honor.
Sure. Yes. I think the best way to refer to the current court's legal theory of life is was actually coined by Leah Littman, and it's the YOLO court.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's just whatever we want to do. Here's some words on paper. Boom. We out.
I'm actually a little shocked that they even bother to put the words on paper. within a day, we have a decision that says, look, states are tantamount. They are the only ones who can choose how they regulate. That's what's going on. Meanwhile, the day before, they said state laws just simply cannot be trusted. The federal government has to stand up. Like, they're not even attempting to have a logical through line, which is something Justice Kagan points out.
They have a political result, and they will say and do whatever in order to advance this far right ideology.
I'm already feeling old. I had the thought, I was like, back in my day, the right hated judicial activism, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, so much for that. So much for that complaint.
And they never hated judicial activism. What they hated,
they didn't like
was
when the left did it.
They hated the result.
Yeah.
I think what this current composition of the court has laid bare is that it's about the result. It's always been about the result. It's not about judicial activism. It's not about originalism. It's about getting what they want.
Yeah.
Period.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. So I guess I should be more clear when I was saying, like, within a day they changed it. So they issue this gun ruling that says the fact that New York has a over 100-year-old law about what it takes to get a gun permit, that they strike down because their decision in Heller, which was new in the 21st century, is more historical than the 111-year-old law. Look, there's a lot of mess there.
We do what we want.
Right. There's a lot of mess there about how they can argue that the thing that only happened in the 21st century is history. But
to be fair, lawyers are really bad at math.
That is fair. I was told there would be no math. There was a lot going on there. But the crux of the argument is states can't be trusted to make their own laws. That's just not how this goes. You can't have this hodgepodge network of states getting up and making their own laws.
We've had it for over 100 years.
Right. Well, whatever. Fast forward to the abortion decision, which we already knew what it was going to say because we'd already seen the leak. Thank you very much, Ginny Thomas, who we all are fairly confident
That
leaker.
You know how you know it's somebody on the conservative side? We've stopped hearing about the investigation.
We stopped hearing about the investigation like a week into the investigation.
That's not true. We heard after the initial thing, we started hearing that they were asking for cell phones records.
Yeah.
And then after the cell phone record information, that's it.
It stopped immediately after that. We heard nothing else. And there's a reason. Anyway, again, this Dobbs decision comes out. The Dobbs decision is predicated on the idea that states are sacrosanct and any regulation has to be done by states. The federal government can't intervene in anything. States are laboratories of democracy. They can do whatever they want. This is without any irony coming immediately after striking down a state statute.
First of all, they do not understand irony.
I guess that's true. I guess that's fair. And now, I guess if there's any hope coming out of it is that we're getting this YOLO point that you're making. We're getting kind of straight up a vision that, no, these people have stopped trying to do law, which is the Kagan dissent. Well, it's all three of the dissenters filed a joint dissent, but I think it's fair to say you can tell what parts Kagan had the biggest hand in, because those are the super snarky, funny parts. But there's a segment where
this is in the Dobbs descent.
In the Dobbs descent, yeah.
Well, there's a lot of cases out there. Just want to be.
No, that's fair. There's points in there where she's just like, what about this situation? What about this situation? Where she just lists all of the opposite results that happen despite this. If you apply the standard of the majority, here's how they would have ruled in all of these other instances where they clearly ruled the other way, because there's no fidelity to any of this. And then yesterday we got, and Chris, this is where I'll bring you in here, because you wrote up this one. We now have, because we've already got all these other ones, we just decided to look at football coaches praying in school and the Establishment Clause, of which there's a well-known lemon test, and we have the Supreme Court go, what lemon test?
RIP Establishment Clause.
And the funny thing is, like, this is the facts of the case are just so egregiously what would have been considered constitutional violations last week.
Right.
I think it was something like the students told administrators they felt pressured to pray. Mm-hmm. The administrators told the coach to stop. The coach was using religious language in like the team speeches.
It's almost like the facts were so bad, that's why the majority lied about them.
Yeah. And like, here's the thing. Their record, it was like 2-7 with like 2 wins, 7 losses. Dude wasn't even praying hard. Like, I mean, as hard as he was praying, it might not have even been to the right God if you're looking at the victory record. But even then, they're like, yeah, we see nothing wrong with this. And the fact that they bypassed the facts of the matter and made it about individual liberty when it's like, no, this is a thing that is clearly impacting others. Like, the this court is doing a really great job of Darvoing. Y'all familiar with Darvoing?
No, what's that one?
Darvo refers to a reaction perpetrators of wrongdoing, particularly sexual offenders, may display in response to being held accountable for their behavior. And the acronym stands for deny, attack, and reverse victim and offender.
Oh, right. Yes. Right.
So what was clearly this guy trying to pressure his students into praying with him, now it's, oh no, the school was trying to prevent this man from vocalizing his religious liberty and, you know, his religious choices, and how dare they do, you know, like, this is mm-hmm. clear, no you, but this is just written in like legalistic language to where it sounds like, oh, this is about an abstract concept like liberty. This is just straight up bullying.
Yeah, I think that didn't the majority write that he was quietly praying as opposed to, you know, the
what on the 50-yard line?
Yeah.
He quietly was doing it privately while his players were doing other things, which it brings us to the dissent that Justice Sotomayor writes, just like throws in pictures from the record where that is
accurate.
Obviously not what was happening.
But like, liar.
Just making stuff up. It's unbelievable, because it's also true that if you, and maybe this is the clever way around this opinion, because if you believe the facts as Gorsuch pretends they existed, then this case actually didn't do anything, because we already had a case. I think it's called Lee or something like that. We already had a case that decided if you're a teacher and you're privately doing it and nobody else hears you necessarily, that isn't an Establishment Clause violation. So the clever, you know, workaround on this opinion is to say, look, if we believe these facts, then it didn't actually change the law. The problem is that those weren't the facts, and how it changed the law is that the facts were what Justice Sotomayor put in the dissent, and they decided those didn't matter.
I think you're forgetting that one of the main tenets of textualism is that you get to choose the parts of the text that you care about.
Yeah.
And focus only on those.
Right.
So, you know.
It's bad. So that's a lot on Supreme Court stuff.
There's more.
Yeah, I think there's probably more. Generate quality briefs, memos, and redlines in minutes with Callidus AI. You enter the case's facts, then Callidus suggests bodies of law, statutes, and precedents. You tell it if those are relevant, and Callidus generates a well-cited, well-formatted document. You can trust what went into it because you put it there. Be exceptionally productive with better outcomes using Legal's most advanced AI platform. Just 3 minutes from registration to results. Get $90 off your first 2 months. Use promo code JOE. at CallidusAI.com. That's CallidusAI.com.
Hey, Gee, what's up?
Just having some lunch, Conrad.
Hey, Gee, do you see that billboard out there?
Oh, you mean that guy out there in the gray suit?
Yeah, the gray suit guy.
Order up. There's all those beautiful, rich, leather-bound books in the background.
That is exactly the one. That's J.D. McGuffin at law. He'll fight for you!
I bet you he has got so many years of experience.
Like decades and decades. And I bet, Gee, I bet he even went to a law school.
Are you a lawyer? Do you suffer from dull marketing and a lack of positioning in a crowded legal marketplace? Sit down with Gee and Conrad for Lunch Hour Legal Marketing on the Legal Talk Network, available wherever podcasts are found.
Well, obviously, the Dobbs decision was,
a win for white life.
Oh, yeah. No, that was a thing. For anybody who didn't catch that, that was the way in which a person introduced Trump about the opinion, saying that Dobbs was a win for white life. So,
and it wasn't an introduction. It was an attraction with applause and grinning. There was no weeping or moaning or gnashing of teeth. This was a very clear thing, which, of course, I guess it's probably going to get spun as it was a Bushism, which she meant to say it was a right to life.
Yeah.
But even and that's sure quite the omission, and that's quite the slip. And also, this is a woman who was like, if Hitler had anything right, it was this one thing: people who control the children control the future. Something along those lines.
When you're positively quoting Hitler, you
don't get to make these kinds of misstatements.
You stop right there. Yeah.
But obviously, this is taking up a
Gestapo.
Lot.
I didn't mean Gestapo. I meant gazpacho. No.
Yeah.
obviously, the Dobbs decision has taken up a lot of the bandwidth, I think, for most folks out there. And one of the things that we're doing here at Above the Law is trying to figure out which big law firms are going to continue to cover abortion care for their employees who live in places where the right to abortion has now either been banned or severely limited. Yeah, so I went through the list of the Am Law 100, and out of that list, 76 firms have offices in places that have trigger laws or other restrictions on the right. There's no more right to abortion, but to abortion care. And so we reached out to those firms and are tracking to figure out exactly which firms will continue to cover travel costs, abortion care, et cetera, et cetera. What's been really interesting to me is that we knew this Dobbs decision was coming for 8 weeks. 8 weeks. It was clear what was happening. We knew what was going on. And lots of firms don't have an answer yet. Or we were investigating to figure it out. And not the only institution that has kind of muffed that 8 week where we actually could have had a response, CEG, the federal government, CEG, the president, whatever. But the point is, we are continuing to track exactly which firms will pay for travel and housing and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, I think that's an important list, not just for people who are there now, but also, for prospective folks.
Two things, by the way, for somebody thinking, 8 weeks, it's not that long. That's 2 weeks longer than the amount of time people have to make the decision to get an abortion or not, depending on some of the states you're in. And two, we're in the phase of American history where we're hoping that the corporations will save us from evil government. Like, this is such a bad scenario to be in. Like,
we are through the looking glass.
Yeah, like, as funny as the dicks out for abortion rights thing was, people should not be looking to Dick's Sporting Goods to be the thing that prevents people from dying from readily, easily addressable health concerns. Like, that is terrifying. Like, it's not even like, The rallying point now isn't even to like realize utopia. It's just to make sure that the bad shit that we're slated for isn't going to happen. And we're dependent on corporations to save us. And that's terrifying.
And this actually, it's interesting that you mentioned phrase it that way, because that is how I've in the past on a different show I was on talked about gun laws. At this point, the only people you can really rely on when it comes to guns is hoping some benevolent billionaire buys a gun company and shuts it down, because there's no other path out.
Yay.
Oh, okay.
Bill Gates, if you're listening, I like Microsoft. I also like Liberty. If you could help out, maybe like buy a Supreme Court justice or six. Just put it out there. I mean, fighting polio is important too, but you know, Liberty.
Yeah. I guess at this point we should transition a little bit before we get to a new story to the question of Supreme Court justice or six. This obviously, with everything that's happened in the last few days, and again, as bad as the substance is, the way it's laid bare that there's not even an effort to justify a lot of these decisions internally. Mm-hmm. So like that it is kind of a dangerously lawless court at this point, given that. There's been an increased call for reforms. Obviously, I'm on record as being a big fan of term limits. There, Ellie Mistal, our former co-host, has been a big believer in expanding the court. There are arguments for both of those in various ways. And with all of these options out there on the table, it seems as though the president's take is to do nothing.
Nope, that's the president's take. And here's the thing, it's such a fucking terrible negotiation tactic.
Right?
Like why take the thing that the right is actually scared of off the table now? Why? What are you doing? Why?
Well, why? For instance, I wrote an article. I am opposed to expanding the court, but pro term limits. I think that over the expanding the court is only a short-term solution, and the only long-term solution is to actually build a court that is responsive to the swings, like a lagging indicator of the swings of the government. That said, I wrote an article several months ago where I said you should walk in and say court expansion, like that. You take the maximalist position and then make it a compromise when you don't go that far. Like, but to begin with, my initial offer is to do absolutely nothing about this.
It's like. Biden has decided to shoot himself in the foot. It's like, don't worry, we're not going to do anything that anybody on the right is afraid of. Don't worry.
Well, I mean, I also think I've said, well, I, well, you know, I mean, that this isn't fair. Nancy Pelosi read a poem, so I guess there's some Democrats who are trying to do something.
But
it does.
What's liberals and symbolic victories? Like, if I see her in I had enough of her when she was cosplaying Wakandans. What the fuck is a poem going to do?
I really think, and I'm still developing exactly the contours of this, but it does seem as though the Democratic Party has become so enamored of the court that where they view their entire value proposition as vote for us and we won't add more problems to courts. That is terminal defense. It means it's like playing soccer with just a goalie on the pitch, and you know that means you're going to stop some things, but you're never going to win. You're at best going to tie forever, and that means, you know, you lose. And when that happens, you need to reevaluate. But this party and definitely at the elected at the leadership level, and I think unfortunately it's become ingrained in the way in which you hear some supporters talk about it. They think
compromise is the starting point.
They think compromise,
and that seeds the right, like always.
Yeah,
well, there's something important with, even if you're not a polemical person, for the purpose of like negotiation, starting with a polemic is helpful strategically, because then you have some wiggle room that could go in your favor. But if you're starting with, okay, I will be deferential, you literally have no ground to gain.
Yeah.
100%. And it's not just the court that Biden has taken this position with. He also has come out and said that he won't let there be abortion providers on federal land in states that have banned abortion. So the other kind of practical solution that people are advancing, he's already nixed. Don't worry, he doesn't have a solution. He's just vetoed a bunch.
Well, and that's my issue with beyond the compromise. What I'm trying to get at is I think there's very much a feeling that the value proposition of the Democratic Party is vote for us and we'll sometimes prevent the hell mouth opening. And that's just not a long-term strategy. And once pressed, they have no solution for how to fix the problem. Mm-hmm. They're like, you should have voted for us before so that we could have stopped it from happening, or delayed it from happening, probably more accurately. But that's all they think they're capable of doing. It's just an approach to governance that is just a severe abdication of the whole purpose of governance. Yeah. Anyway, you know, speaking of the Supreme Court and how it impacts the legal industry, let's take a quick aside to, you know, the saddest man in the world, which is Paul Clement, former Solicitor General, who won the case that determined that the states with the lowest gun mortality. This is interesting, actually. I don't know if everybody knew this. If you list out all the states and the incidence of gun mortality per capita in them, there's a bunch of them right at the bottom that have very few deaths, and then, you know, a bunch that have, unfortunately, tons. And those ones that have very few deaths are the ones that just got their laws struck down by the Supreme Court. And the winner of that case, Paul Clement, who was working at the time for Kirkland and Ellis, was super excited about it. And then Kirkland and Ellis decided that this was the public relations nightmare that they certainly had no interest in being involved in. And more importantly, that none of their other clients had any interest in being involved in.
Yeah.
And they told Paul, okay, you have now made it to the end of this case. It's time to call it a day, buddy. We're not doing these gun cases anymore. So how does a professional respond to that? I assume by just kind of sucking it up and realizing, hey, there's other fights that I can do and mm-hmm. so on, or what?
I mean, you've already won the biggest gun case.
Exactly. So what does a mature professional do?
Not what happened.
I'll be honest, I'm still stuck on this religious freedom case.
Amazing.
I'm sorry.
So what a mature professional actually does is go to the Wall Street Journal and write thousands of words of whining about how his firm's mean and they're trying to like cancel culture. And as a lawyer, I have a duty to it. You don't.
Also, the case is over.
Right. You have duties. That's why you didn't get told this a year ago.
Right.
The firm did respect your duties. They are now have reached their completion and you can move on with your life. But this goes to our new favorite term, Darvo, I guess, because this this op-ed
is a good term.
Yeah. This op-ed is a series of I'm the victim here and the firms just are mean and I'm the champion for like trying to take these cases that lead to more children getting shot.
And Kirkland, with its billions in revenue, was like, shut up. We're done. We're done with you.
Well, and the crazy thing is this isn't the first time Paul's done this. See, this guy has an MO because he's, you know, a born snowflake loser. This guy does this all the time because the last firm he left after when over gay rights, because it reached a point where the firm he was working for decided, you know, we've decided we don't want to be associated with a bunch of cases saying it's okay to, you know, it's okay to be bigots. And he then responded to that by going around to the media and complaining about how he was being persecuted for trying to just take some cases. This is his MO. He does this all the time. Now, I mean, maybe it's at an end because his solution this time is to found his own firm. So I don't think he can quit that. But who knows? Maybe his other partners will cancel culture him someday in the future when he's, I don't even know what can possibly be next after this term. I do know what's next.
It's gay marriage again.
Well, when it's affirmative action next term, then it will be gay marriage again. And I think we all agree with that.
I meant particularly for Clement, but yeah.
I'm just waiting for once they get rid of interracial marriage, Clarence talking to Guinea saying, listen, it's not us. It's what the founding fathers would have wanted.
Right. It's not me. It's your founders. It's all coming. And there is some active gaslighting going on. Alito puts it in his Dobbs opinion that, you know, some people are going to say that this opinion means that we're going to strike down gay marriage or the laws against being homosexual or the laws or interracial marriage, but that's or contraception. But that's ridiculous. We obviously aren't doing that. The dissent brilliantly goes through this by noting that in Thomas's concurrence, he
explicitly
he didn't get the memo and decided to go ahead and say, and so because of this, that's why we're now going to strike those things down.
To be fair, the founders probably would have ignored the clear writings with the black dude too. So
yeah, fair enough. But the gaslighting aspect, and you hear people repeating this Alito thing, and it's been, I've seen it on social media. It is all a lie. And the mm-hmm. reason you know it's a lie is because you could have struck down Roe a million and one ways, and they chose the way that was the only rights that really exist are those that were deeply rooted in the nation's history and tradition. And what Alito says that means is stuff that was legal in the 1700s. That would suggest that these other rules are in severe danger and will be moved to next. And this isn't out of the ordinary for the Alito approach. He often says, like he did with Roe, that's settled law, we won't possibly do that. But what he means is we won't possibly do anything with it until someone brings a case that allows us to do something with it.
Right.
Yeah.
And it being the most egregious case as to where if we allow this, we allow anything.
It'll be like a big right-wing talking point is this idea that precedent, it's not a problem to overturn longstanding precedent because if the precedent's wrong, it can always be overturned. And they, for this, always cite Brown v. Board, which half of them want to overturn anyway if you look at some of their judicial hearings. But they cite that as because they know it has kind of a halo around it as an opinion and say, look, that overturned Plessy, and that was way older than even Roe was at the time. So
wasn't Marbury v. Madison like poorly decided? Why not that?
Well, overturning Marbury v. Madison, which, by the way, that's an excellent point. Where originalism seems to have a big blind spot is the framers did not intend the Supreme Court to have judicial review.
That is not in the Constitution. Like, if we're already starting with the New York gun law that was like over 100 years old, they're like, oh, this is bad. Fuck it. Let's have the effective verse of just delivering the mail. This whole judicial review shit, let's just get rid of that. How about that? You want to give it to the states? All right.
I wonder if, like, with an originalism, if you bring up Marbury versus Madison, is it like telling a computer to define love or something where it like just starts scheming?
The answer is 42.
Yeah. Nice. But what I was saying about this is that these attacks, there were a million ways of overturning. Oh, yeah, the Brown issue, like Brown, people cite like, oh, it overturns separate but equal, but it didn't really just say, hey, that opinion was wrong. It cites, hey, we've learned things about education. We have new information now. And based on that information, it changes that doctrine. That's not happening in this opinion. There's no attempt to say that in this opinion that something has changed. And there are disingenuous arguments that you could have made for that, but they don't. Instead, he cites a bunch of stuff from the 1300s that was available, readily available to those justices before, which would seem to suggest that it's not new information, but whatever. Anyway, we've talked about this, and we will certainly have to talk about this again next week, because next week I assume we're determining that CO2 emissions have personhood or whatever.
Almost certainly.
Yeah. So we'll be back on that, and hopefully some other legal news. Hopefully some law firms have done something or between now and then too.
Or Dick's Sporting Goods, apparently.
I mean, Dick's Sporting Goods is doing the real work here. We're all done, right? Good.
Peace.
Good. No, I've got to talk. You know, like you should be subscribed to the show and give it reviews, stars, write something, listen to other shows like the Jabot or the rest of the Legal Talk Network's offerings or the Legal Tech Week Journalist Roundtable. And you should be reading Above the Law, where you see these and other stories before we even talk about them here. You know, those sorts of things.
Do they know the places they can follow us?
I don't think they do. Like, you can follow me at Joseph Patrice, and you can follow Catherine at Catherine1, and you can follow...
With, like, the numeral?
With the numeral one, yeah. Mm. And Chris, you can follow at Rights for Rent.
I do write for rent.
That's true. And we can do all of that stuff here.
Oh, okay. So should we do it?
Now we'll do it. No, okay. Now I think that's sufficient. Yeah. All right, now I think we can be done.
Bye.
Have a good one.
If you're a lawyer running a solo or small firm and you're looking for other lawyers to talk through issues you're currently facing in your practice, Join the Unbillable Hours Community Roundtable, a free virtual event on the third Thursday of every month. Lawyers from all over the country come together and meet with me, lawyer and law firm management consultant Christopher T. Anderson, to discuss best practices on topics such as marketing, client acquisition, hiring and firing, and time management. The conversation is free to join, but requires a simple reservation. The link to RSVP can be found on the Unbillable Hour page at LegalTalkNetwork.com. We'll see you there.